All right, Place Me Nation Universe, we are back. Yeah, we were just here last week for NXT TakeOver. We're back with Backlash. As yes, just another time for another show for the Place Me Nation WWE Reaction Series. I'm your host, Chris Zellner, joined as always by my co-hosts on these shows, the Oracle of WWE, Devin Hales. And Devin, we had a hell of a TakeOver last week. Now we have Backlash, and it was really interesting show until the main event. Two different types of shows for sure.
Yeah, it's been a relatively interesting news week in wrestling, as it has been for the majority of the pandemic era of wrestling, I suppose you could call it. Maybe a bit of a morbid title, but a lot of people have been calling it that. We should probably talk about briefly the news that came out. What was it, on Thursday evening?
Yes, Thursday news dump. Yes, where Paul Heyman has been removed from power from Monday Night Raw, and Bruce Pritchard is in charge of both shows. Which, basically, the only change is that everybody else is still there in their spot. So basically, Bruce Pritchard is now over the Raw staff and over the SmackDown staff. And this is something, if you've been watching Raw, has looked like it's been going on for, a little bit. You could tell that Raw has some changes going on recently. And this is why. And there's some people on Raw that are not happy, and nor should they be. Raw had become the show where people of color got to flourish. I mean, so many non-whites were getting featured spots on Raw, and just it was a different atmosphere altogether, which in a Paul Heyman promotion, Paul Heyman booked show in WWE per se, the talent is always going to be with Paul. He has this way of getting them, you know. And now that he's not there, and Raw, to be honest, Raw has been the better show, since, you know, in this whole deal. But the ratings haven't shown that. Even though there's still like one or two every Monday night in the ratings, they're still not good, and yes, we're in the pandemic, but Vince is going to Vince, and there's no more XFL, so once that happened, Vince is back on wrestling 100% again, and he's just going to do what he does, and he's going to go with somebody who he trusts, one of his guys, and that's Bruce Pritchard. And of course, Bruce is tight with Kevin Dunn, and you know, it's a power shift back to Vince, but also, in a way, helps out Paul Levesque, because Paul Heyman had been kind of undermining Paul Levesque in ways. Of course, Paul, Triple H, got demoted, recently, and it said that Paul was, you know, kind of infringing on some NXT things in a way, and there had been some issues with NXT talent getting on the main show and how that transgressed. And now Paul Levesque's biggest foe is gone. So I'm sure he's probably pretty happy right now. But it's going to be interesting. See, I don't watch SmackDown. You do. So what should I expect to see from a Bruce Pritchard Monday Night Raw?
Well, I mean, I think he's probably been mostly fully in charge since Money in the Bank. I think he probably started taking the reins of the show maybe a week after Money in the Bank. I mean, I would argue that the entire build of the Ed Orton program was something that Pritchard might do. I think the Street Profits, Viking Raiders storyline and segments are definitely something out of the Bruce Pritchard playbook. I think Zelina Vega's group being used as mid-card gatekeepers is certainly something that Paul Heyman, I don't think, would do and something that Bruce Pritchard would. I think Pritchard probably thinks that group is good, but I don't think he thinks they're good enough to win. People just all across the board, like the Cedric Ricochet tag team, where have they been? They haven't been on TV outside of main event in a month. I wonder why.
Liv Morgan.
Akira Tozawa, who reappeared tonight in a very
we'll talk about that.
Richard-like fashion. We'll discuss that. He's been disappearing the last month. No, he wasn't winning matches when Heyman liked him, thought he was a good wrestler, and featured him on Raw most weeks. Ruby Riott, where is she at? Taking hot pictures with Shotzi Blackheart on Instagram. I'm revealing my taste a little bit too much there.
Everybody has their own.
where's Bianca Belair? You know, these people that I think Heyman would have been willing and proved to be willing to at least have on television and at least build their characters are no longer being built. And I think you can say the same a little bit for Aleister Black, who has been involved still and is in sort of a program with Rollins, but he's not being featured quite as well in the last month either. I think the evidence all points to that Pritchard has been involved on Raw for the last month.
Well, I mean, he got that great spot Monday where he came out of nowhere diving on Rollins when during the Ray thing.
Yeah, that's true.
He's part of the whole Ray undercurrent deal, you know?
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, it's been there. There's been changes.
And I almost forgot. I'm sorry. Charlotte Flair.
Well,
Charlotte
has, you know, everybody on her side. So.
Yes, that's true. I was just about to correct myself there. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, so, and you know, I mean, you can say what you will about Charlotte, but I mean, she's,
to be fair, she is a great wrestler. So I don't want to jump on her too much. But
it's not just that; is she is a star. I mean, yes. She carries herself that way. She's, you know, established that way. So.
And real quick, I also think that with Becky being gone for probably definitely the remainder of 2020, you know, I think they panicked and go, well, she's alone, you know, Charlotte's the only one we can put here. So.
Well, we'll talk more about her as we go along with this show because we got, you know, the Raw Women's title and she's technically on, and she's on Raw. And right. She's, you know, been involved with NXT too and has showed up on SmackDown. But yeah, I mean. It's going to be interesting to see because there's been rumors of probably some more roster changes going on. And I think, you know, the rumor is that we will be having shows in front of fans in July. So if that happens, either we'll have it in July or we'll have it at the SummerSlam. They'll probably do the Superstar Shakeup they never did.
Yeah. That's true. Although with I'll throw this out very briefly. Don't want to talk about this too much, but with the spikes in Florida recently, I'll be interested to see if they come through with that.
But, well, yeah, but I think, you know, to stay on that subject real quick, I think there is a lot of people in this country, and I said this on Twitter, that basically come to the realization that they don't care anymore.
I agree.
Yep. I see it in my life.
For better or worse, I agree.
Yep. I mean, the mentality is people get sick, people going to die. It's just the way it is. Just like everything else in life. So,
unfortunately, be safe out there, folks.
Yeah, it's sad it's that way, but it is. I think it is for a lot of people. All right, well, let's get going here with Backlash. Charlie Caruso interviewed Ric Flair and Christian in the pre-show. Flair advocating for Orton, obviously. Christian for Edge, but they both put Orton over, and both picked their guys to win. So there's that, predictable. All right, U.S. Heavyweight Title match: Apollo Crews defended against Andrade. who has Zelina and Angel Garza in his corner. Apollo Crews has some new theme music. So got that to die. Kevin Owens on commentary wearing Kevin Owens standard gear but with a necktie. He classed himself up. He was there, he said, to make sure Garza didn't screw it up. He was going to check him. So they went out there, had about a 7-minute match, which if you've seen their TV matches, I mean, this was basically the condensed version of their TV matches. Kind of like a greatest hits type match. Really good stuff. Both hitting their big moves. Crews hit a standing moonsault, the shooting star, and then Garza got on the apron, distracting the referee. Owens then gave Garza the stunner. Crews was watching that. Andrade tried to get him from behind, but Crews got him. Spinning to that powerbomb. Got the pinfall. Crews retained the title. So, he celebrated with Owens after the match. So, Crews retained. Kind of surprised by that, knowing how Vince is and Bruce in a way. But he kept the belt. And, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where they go from here. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, good match. I basically agree with you on the quality in terms of what it was. It was a condensed version of what their previous matches were on TV, which were a little bit better. But, you know, this was a good, fine match. Owens is fun on commentary. Shout out to Samoa Joe, who is getting really good on commentary. He was great all night.
We'll talk about him during the main event.
it was, you know, good match. A lot of people were surprised that Crews won. I actually wasn't, because I think Bruce was already in charge before Crews won the title. And two, even though Andrade is Charlotte's man, I still think they see them as mid-card gatekeepers and mid-card fodder. And they're going to be more willing to put the babyface champion over them than otherwise.
I think we're about to see something happen. I would not be shocked if they did, you know, they've been teasing the breakup here with Andrade and Garza.
They have.
If we get Andrade and Charlotte together on screen as an act.
Interesting. That'd be something.
We saw, I mean, Vince wanted to do that with Seth and Becky, and we saw how that worked. But this is a different dynamic. You know? This is a different dynamic, and we've seen by their social media, I mean, they are a different type of affectionate than Seth and Becky is. I mean, they may actually have sex in the ring. Just comes up. So I think it makes sense to do it and to get Andrade on that next level. Because I think, like I said, Charlotte is there as a star, and then you get Andrade with her. And she can, you know, she can do the talking to get the heat. And, I mean, that's the who's the baby face, but does it really matter? I mean, does it really matter anymore? It does. There's no fans. It doesn't matter.
Not right now with no fans, no.
It doesn't matter. So, I think that's something that's going to be, because they're teasing the breakup. So, something's going to happen with Andrade, Garza, and Zelina. Something's going to happen there. So, I don't know. We'll see if I'm right or if I'm wrong. Who knows? It's just a thought. But anyway, it's a good little segment. All right. Now we get to the main show here. We had the triple threat tag match for the women's tag titles as Bayley and Sasha defending against Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross and the Iconics, where the winner of this match will be at NXT Wednesday, defending against Devin's favorite, Shotzi Blackheart, and Tegan Knox, who I'm kind of, have, you know, fond of in a way. And yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what happened here. We got our, you know, I was glad that they put out the whole backstory here of Bayley and Sasha, of course, being the original champions. They lost the belts to the Iconics. Alexa and Nikki beat the Iconics. And here we are. So here's your, I mean, we have the three sets of tag champions in this one match. It's simple, but effective. It gets it up, gets over that this is what, you know, this is what's going on here. So I had thought going into this and just, you know, how the story was going, I thought we might get something with Alexa and Nikki here. Finally, Alexa turns on Nikki. And then, you know, how Nikki was playing, you know, up Alexa, you know, going to the ring, very over, you know, very happy, joyous, you know, jumping around, all this other stuff. And then even, you know, talk about, you know, Nikki taking the fall, you know, in that last match they had for the titles, and how she was just all upset about that and disappointed that she did that for Alexa. So I thought, okay, we're going to get something here. Well, I was wrong. We'll talk about that in just a minute. So Bayley and Sasha, they're constantly teasing them. So, you know, that's always something that's in the back of your mind. And then the Iconics had their little friction a couple weeks ago. So you could think any one of these teams could break down right here. Well, it didn't happen. Match was okay. Sloppy in ways. Kevin Dunn was insane in this match with camera cuts. Oh, my God. The one thing this match made me want to see, though, was a Sasha Peyton singles match, because I thought they worked really well together. But, yeah, Alexa hit Twisted Bliss on Peyton, was about to pin her, and Sasha just rolled her up and got a pinfall win. So Sasha over Alexa twice. You know, Sasha pinned Alexa a couple weeks ago on SmackDown. So Sasha gets another win over Alexa. Sasha and Bayley retain. They go to NXT Wednesday night. So, what were your thoughts on this?
You know, they've got to get rid of the... They started this trend a couple of years ago where if they have a triple threat tag or a four-way tag, they do this idiotic garbage bullshit thing where they have, you know, each member of the team in a fucking ring at the same time. I hate that. Like... Just have two people in the ring.
Well, like, they're making it like the three-way dance. You know, they're doing it the original way.
Just, it sucks. It's just not for me. It's just I can't. It's just it's a total mess. And it wasn't on them. You know, they worked hard. It was just the aging and structure of the match was a mess. The production was a mess, like you pointed out. It was just a mess. Wasn't like an awful match or anything, but it was sort of, you know, they just weren't helped by the production and the agenting of the match. It was not the type of match that I'm into. But you know, I am excited to see Bayley and Sasha do a little bit of the traveling champs deal that I think we, you know, a lot of people wanted to see them do last year. I think we might get a month or so of that before they inevitably lose the belts and start building to their probable clash. Presumably at SummerSlam right now, but we still don't quite know where things are going to be by that point. But that would be my guess. But I'm excited for the tag match on Wednesday. Sasha and Shotzi probably, you know, take crazy bumps in their head or something. So, be a very fun match to watch, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And it's going to be interesting to see which team eventually gets the tag titles. So, what they do in the end. But
I also want to point out that the women's tag titles are actually being really, you know, the Kabuki Warriors did a lot for those tag belts, lot for them, because they're pretty they're a pretty valuable commodity now, where for the majority of last year they were not. And I do like that the women's tag titles are a little bit more of a bigger deal now.
Yeah, they've done a good job, you know, of kind of, you know, protecting them, making them, you know, feel important. And I think they need to defend them more in NXT.
Yes, I agree.
Whoever the champion is. So, there you go. All right. So, after this, Braun arrives in his Buick Grand National, which I do not know. I have no idea why they called it the Plymouth. It says Buick right there on the car. It is a Buick Grand National. It's a badass ride, though. All blacked out and everything. So I don't know if it's really his car or not, but it took a beating from the Miz and Morrison a couple weeks ago, so you pretty much guess what was going to happen to it tonight. Although, it didn't happen the way you thought. We'll talk about that later. Next, we get Sheamus and Jeff Hardy. Again, I don't watch SmackDown. So I'm seeing the piss stuff for the first time, and I'm like, oh my goodness.
Sells ratings.
So, well, yeah, I guess so. They did the same type of angle 14 years ago with Shawn and Vince. And then, of course, Lawler and Jake the Snake did, you know, this type of angle in 1996. No piss test or anything, but they're making fun of somebody who had drug abuse issues. So they've done this before. This is nothing new for them. I mean, it's good, but it's nothing new for them. So they went out there and had a pretty long match here. Went about 16 minutes. And both guys worked hard. Did their usual deal. Jeff hit the twist of fate, Swanton, but Sheamus got his foot on the rope. Sheamus then rolled outside, so Hardy ran the barricade, tried to hit his dive on Sheamus. Then he hit a bro kick. Sheamus then hit another bro kick, this time in the ring. Sheamus gets the 1-2-3 win. Corey Graves emphasized that Jeff Hardy has let everyone down again. But, yeah, I think this match went way too long. Way too long. This mismatch should have been half the time that it was here. I have no explanation why they went 16 minutes and 48 seconds. Could have been better. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it was a good match. I think 11 or 12 minutes would have been more sufficient in terms of time. You know, a little sloppy, but I mean, come on, it's a Jeff Hardy match. What do you expect? You know, work was good. The biggest question mark I had out of this is why and when were the NXT fans and wrestlers listening to my mom's Gregorian chant CDs and doing the Jeff Hardy chants and Gregorian chant style? I thought that was odd. But, yeah, like, you know, it was too long. They definitely should have shaved off about 5 minutes for sure. Good match. A lot of people were kind of puzzled that Jeff lost, but I kind of agree with some people that, you know, when a guy takes piss to the face, you know.
It's very pissed on and pissed off and pissed on. Which was edited on television, but not edited here.
Right.
Well, we're on the network.
You know, I feel like Sheamus, you know, probably earned this one based off the kayfabe booking. But, yeah, you know, match was good. Just you know, I'm with you here. Too long.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, that time just went better. Went better. All right. Next, Kayla interviewed Miz and Morrison, and it was announced to them that the handicap match universal title meant that only one of them could be the champion, not both of them. They were surprised by that, but they were fine with it eventually. This is as long as one of them won. Then Otis and Mandy Rose showed up. And Otis said he's going to cash in the Money in the Bank, possibly. Like one of them won the belt. So, at least they got that tease out there, you know. To show that this is, hey, remember, I got Money in the Bank. This could happen. So, they got that out there, just, you know, even though it wasn't going to happen. But, yeah, Otis's belly was the star of the segment, as usual. Although Mandy was there with him too, so she's always a star too. All right, next, we get the Raw Women's Championship. Asuka against Nia Jax. Everybody was waiting on this match with bated breath. Nia Jax didn't kill Asuka in this match because Asuka's not named Kairi Sane. But they had, you know, a hard-hitting match here. Fine for what it was. Could have been another. Could have been a lot better. Asuka, of course, was the star of the match. Asuka got an armbar on Nia outside the ring. Nia threw into a barricade. Asuka kicked her in the head. Referee counted to 10 before she got back in the ring. So the match ended in a double count out. Asuka retained the title. And then she gave the ass-based offense to her before she left. Shit finish, but next month's Extreme Rules. So they will be back in action, Extreme Rules, and some type of deal. So this feud must continue, sadly. So, I mean, Nia Jax, she's careless. I mean, she can work. We've seen her do it. But she has not been good since she came back from injury, in my opinion. And Asuka deserves so much better. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I've tried to defend Nia Jax over the years because you try to give somebody the benefit of the doubt. But when you continuously work careless in the ring over years, it's time to start just saying it. Like, she's careless in the ring. You know, she's not safe. I'm not saying Asuka would have given her a receipt, but she's certainly the type that might have given her a receipt. So maybe Nia knew that and decided to not fall, you know, maybe not do things that she might regret. But, you know, the match was fine. It was, you know, it had some potential, and then it just had that horseshit finish. Like, I don't know. I mean, that's a finish that you do on TV.
Like, no fans?
It's
yeah. No fans, you know.
Yeah.
You get away with it when you don't have fans.
Very true. You know, you're right. Doesn't matter.
When you have no fans in the audience, both promotions we watch, I mean, can get away with so much stuff.
That's true.
Because there's no fans.
That's true. You know, I mean, obviously, the rumors and the booking all indicate that Charlotte Flair is going to be involved. I wouldn't be surprised to see a triple threat match at Extreme Rules, you know, or something like that. I think ultimately, you know, it'll be Asuka and Charlotte at SummerSlam in a singles match for the title. But, you know, I was hoping that the Asuka Nia portion would be over with tonight, and it definitely isn't, which is, you know, I'm with you. I'm not thrilled to see that continue either. Nia's, I've given her the benefit of the doubt for a long time, but it's, you know, it's time to just be honest and just say, hey, she's careless. She's hurt. You know, 50% of the women on the roster. it's time to call her out a little bit.
Yep. All right. Then Extreme Rules is a month away. So.
Ooh. Yeah, 5 weeks.
MVP was on the phone next with somebody ordering champagne for the celebration party. Lana showed up, talked about how important she was to Bobby's success. MVP said, it ain't my fault Bobby's telling you not to come to the ring and stay backstage. He said, you can take that with him, but you won't. MVP left, and Lana was looking upset. So, we go to the handicap match for the Universal title. Braun Strowman defeated The Miz and John Morrison to retain the title in 7 minutes and 20 seconds. Miz and Morrison did their entrance, and then we were treated to the Miz and Morrison video. It's hilarious. It's entertaining. I can say that. What do you think about the video?
I didn't love it quite as much as everybody else, but it was very well produced, and it did get a bit of a laugh from me. And I did laugh a little, admittedly. It was. I think the most impressive thing is that it actually, like, it was produced so well that if you didn't listen to the lyrics, it actually sounded like a real song that you would hear on, like, the radio.
Yes. So,
like, it was like shockingly well produced, which kind of adds to the hilarity of it. But yeah, it was enjoyable. I didn't quite like it as much as others, but it was definitely funny.
Yeah. And then we get Braun's new deal, which I have not seen yet. The Strowman Express. I'm like, what the fuck is this train? It's like, holy shit. So Braun comes out there, and Miz and Morrison get their offense in. And then Miz pulls Morrison off of Braun as he had him pinned. So we have that going on. And then Braun's like, fuck it. He gave Miz a choke slam, gave Miz a choke slam, Morrison the power slam, and beat him. Just like that. 1, 2, 3. It's over. Hilarious.
You know what? This match actually was, like, up to this point, was legitimately, outside of the pre-show match, I guess, was the most well-worked, well-structured match of the entire show. Not even close. Like,
boy.
It was 7 minutes, didn't overstay its welcome. It went the way it should have. The finish was the way it should have been. I mean, they did the bit where Miz may have cost him, you know, the title, because they realized, you know, like, they did the whole, you know, they did everything they needed to do in the time that they did. And it was pretty much the right match, you know. I don't like handicap matches, particularly for a friggin' world title.
Singles title,
but,
yes.
You know, hey, you know, I got to give them credit. They delivered and did what they were supposed to do. And that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, I mean, it's at this point in the show where, I mean, let's see. We had the Raw Women's title, but we've had all these SmackDown matches, and I'm like, oh my god. I mean, this show is like, oh, this show is dragging. I'm like, man, I am not inspired by none of this. So then AJ does an interview. They show clips of him and Brian, which they call an instant classic now. And AJ said he's going to have a championship celebration. Everyone's invited, including Brian, because he had the most to learn. Something's happening Friday.
Yeah. Well, we got to mention how AJ was bullied out of the Raw locker room real quick. But
yeah, we found out why AJ was traded to SmackDowns, because everybody was giving shit for being a flat earther and all this other stuff.
So ridiculous. It's so absurd in every way.
Yeah, well, that's a Paul Heyman, you know, type of thing where he rallies the troops, you know, and they're all united against AJ Styles. Amazing. So, and also, you know, Styles and Punk had their little tete-a-tete this week as well.
That's right. I have no respect for that man, for that guy.
Yeah, so lots of stuff.
That's what he said.
Lots of stuff involving AJ this week. All right, next we get the WWE Championship match as Drew McIntyre defended against Bobby Lashley. And this was the best thing on the show up to this point. Really, really strong match here. Lashley looked tremendous. Best Lashley's looked in a long time. Drew's great as usual. So they work very well together here. Both of them hit all their spots as expected. You know, hard hitting match, big beefy action. Drew hit a superplex, went full of Claymore, but Lashley hit a spear. And as Bobby's about to go for the pin, here comes Lana. And MVP said, go home! Go to the back! Drew pushed Lashley into Lana, who was on the apron at this point. Lana fell in the MVP's arms. They both collapsed to the floor. Then Lashley turns around, eats a Claymore kick. 1, 2, 3. So, yeah, was the finish what it was? Yeah, but the finish, you know, storyline-wise made sense. And it's furthering the angle. And I think these two will meet again in Extreme Rules. So, there's that. I think there, you know, there's purpose for all this that's going on here. But I really like this match. That was really good. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, this was real, real good. I like, I've come to the point now where unless it's like just totally falling apart mess, I love botches and shit in matches. So like the spot where Lashley dropped Drew on his head on the floor when he was trying to do the like F5 into the post the first time was amazing. Like I like leaped out of my seat during that. But yeah, this match was awesome. Just two big guys having a heavyweight fight. You know, some people probably, you know, might roll their eyes, but you know, they had a really good feud in TNA back in 2016 or 2017. And so I had, you know, pretty good expectations for this because their matches back then were good and this one was really good too. Yeah, and of course I think this will continue. I was fine with the finish. Some people didn't like it. You know, the finish here was a finish that I'm fine with because it added to the story, but we still had a 1-2-3 pinfall or a submission, you know, not some DQ or you know, count out BS. Yeah, this was a good match though. I really enjoyed it as well.
Yeah. I had totally forgot about the TNA series there.
Yeah, they may have been at Slammiversary, I believe.
Yeah, they had a nice little run there in TNA, absolutely. And like I said, we'll probably see them again at Stream Rolls. It's some type of deal. All right, next we have what was supposed to be the Street Profits and Viking Raiders for the Raw Tag Titles. Well, they were in the parking lot brawling. That's the start of this. And then Montez threw Eric on top of Braun Strowman's car, and they freaked out and ran away. Poor Braun. And Braun never showed up again to be pissed off by his car. Now, there's an interesting point here in all this. Did we not find out on Raw that, you know, these two teams were really, you know, just, you know, they were really friends and they were just having fun in the competition. Why were they beating each other up out there in the parking lot?
I don't know. I guess, you know, I guess we can ask, you know, something to wrestle next, you know, on their next podcast or something. I mean, I don't know. But
so then, so then this transcends into our cinematic match of the evening. As they start brawling again in the back. We get a callbacks to their previous deals on TV and their competitions. They're doing all kinds of comedy here. And it was cute, but it was going way too fucking long. And all of a sudden, here comes some motorcycles and guys in black. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And I notice it's all ninjas. I'm like, oh, shit. And one got the bike and revealed himself as Akira Tozawa. I was like, what? Nobody expected that. So he offered up a challenge in Japanese. And then the Raiders and Prophets huffled up to become the Viking Prophets. And started fighting the ninjas. They beat all Tozawa's guys up. And then all of a sudden, Tozawa is left all alone. And all of a sudden, appearing out of nowhere is Giant Ninja, which is the guy who is the Nigerian guy in the performance center, the Nigerian Nightmare. This huge man. Huge. And the Viking Prophets run away from him. They want no part of him. And they get on top of one of the trucks, and they start brawling on the truck. And we get all kinds of stuff up there. They end up in a dumpster where Ivar has flashbacks to everybody think all the women think he was cute, which leads to referee Jessica Carr showing up, asking what they were doing in the dumpster, and she said Ivar was cute, but Eric wasn't. That's the joke. And then all of a sudden, as they're trying to get out of the dumpster, something out of the Loch Ness Monster shows up and tries to pull them back in. I don't know what the fuck's going on. It was a cute segment. And the Tozawa stuff I thought was fun, but wow. My goodness. What were your thoughts on this?
Not for me. It was stupid. Like, this is the kind of shit that like, this is totally Bruce Pritchard right here. This is total Bruce Pritchard.
Oh, yeah.
Bullshit.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, I think sometimes, you know, I can be hyperbolic and we can be hyperbolic and, you know, about, oh, Bruce. No, this was fucking Bruce right here. And this was total horse shit. Like, it was just, I was like, what the fuck? Like, and I try not to be into, like, the whole, like,
Kevin Dunn, too. We cannot let Kevin Dunn slot on this as well.
Oh, no. Yes, you're right. We can't let Kevin Dunn or Vince get away with this either.
God damn.
But, you know, I don't want to be too much like, you know, no offense to your Between the Sheets co-host, but I don't want to be too much like Bix and try to find every little WWE, you know, dig or whatever. But I think there can be something to be said about, like, this sort of as, like, a troll of, like, tag team wrestling and almost like a, like, sort of dig at groups like FTR and stuff. I don't think that's totally out of the question. It's basically turning the tag division into a comedy routine. I mean, that's I don't think that's totally out of line to think that. But it was just stupid. It didn't make any sense, you know. Like, I don't know. Like, it was bizarre. And it went too long, you know. This particular cinematic experience wasn't for me.
Yeah, I said if it wasn't for Tozawa and the Ninjas, it'd just be a complete fucking disaster. But Tozawa and the Ninjas made it funny to me. I was not expecting that. So props to them for that, but Jesus Christ. Not good. Not good at all. I don't know. Not encouraging stuff there, Devin, for future television, is it?
No, it's not.
Not encouraging at all. Well, you know, we had the Lashley and Drew match, which, you know, was a really good match. Then we had this shit sandwich of a segment. Next, we get the greatest wrestling match ever. Edge and Randy Orton. Tom Phillips and let us know before the match that the viewing experience is going to be enhanced as they would use some different production devices such as unique camera angles and quote-unquote amplified audio, which meant fake crowd noise. The first time that we've had that, you know, on WWE programming in the pandemic era, and we'll talk about that. Anyway, Charles Robinson was dressed like an old school referee, blue, light, not light blue shirt, but, you know, a ring mat color blue shirt and a bow tie. The lights went out, and all of a sudden, the MSG mic appeared out of nowhere, and Ghost Howard Finkel did the announcing of the participants, which was a cool spot. I liked that. Nice little tribute to Howard, because they didn't give him the best tribute after he died. This match went 44 minutes and 47 seconds. So a very long match, but these two guys went out there and had a hell of a damn match. Was it the greatest wrestling match ever? No. But it's one of the best matches that they put on a long time in this promotion. And probably Randy Orton's best pay-per-view match, I would say, if ever, long time. Because he's usually known for having better TV matches than pay-per-view matches for some reason. Edge, the guy has not had a true match, where I'm not counting WrestleMania bullshit, and Royal Rumble was what it was, has not had a true match in 9.5 years, basically. Since his last match at WrestleMania with Alberto Del Rio. And he went out there and he performed like a motherfucker. Went out there and just let it all out there. And these two guys went for everything. They hit their all their moves. They hit other people's moves. I mean, it was just, it was worked like you would see like this Japanese big show main event work. You know, like a All Japan Budokan, New Japan Tokyo Dome, New Japan Sumo Hall type deal. I mean, they went out there and they put it out there, and I mean, it was tremendous stuff. We had drama, we had the extra mics, we had the extra cameras. And Orton at one point told us, "I'm gonna kill you, motherfucker." We had Orton juicing from above his eye heavily at one point in time. It's crazy. It's crazy stuff. So Orton got the RKO near fall. Orton went for a punt, Edge hit the spear. Edge hit another spear, Orton kicked out. Orton hit another RKO near fall. Edge went for his anti-venom choke, which is interesting. Never could really get it on good. Orton kicked out of it. Said Orton might have kicked him low. Didn't actually know that for sure. And then as Edge was laying down, Orton hit the ultimate kill shot. He hit the punt. First time he's hit the punt since when, Devin?
Oh, God. Do you know the answer to this?
I do not. I figured you might know.
I know he punted Jericho out during one, like in the fall of 2014 for sure. I think he might have tried it on Brock but didn't hit it in the SummerSlam match.
Yeah, but he didn't hit it then.
The last time he hit it, boy, I think it might be Jericho in 14.
So at least 6 years.
Yeah, I think so.
He's teased it on occasion, but has never hit it because it's quote unquote a banned move.
Right.
So this was the ultimate kill shot, and he got it and pinned Edge 1-2-3. After the match, he was about to make love with Edge on the mat, and he was telling him that go home, be with Beth, be with Lyric and Ruby, go home. They tried to stretch your Edge out. He brushed them off. Got up on his own. And that's the way they left the show. Orton banged up on his face. Edge suffered a torn triceps during this match. Don't know exactly when it happened. But he did. So he's hurt. Torn tricep for a guy his age. Who knows how long it's going to be before he get back in the ring. But, Jesus, I mean, what an effort here. So, was it the greatest wrestling match? No. But was it a tremendous match, excellent match? Indeed, it was. And even if you're not a fan of these guys, I would suggest watching this. I know some people were very pissed off about the crowd noise, the fake crowd noise. And I get it. I do. I thought it was funny. It didn't bother me. I just thought it was hilarious. I didn't let it take away my enjoyment of the match, but props to these two. And props to these two guys. So, what were your thoughts?
You know, I'll go ahead and quickly get my very brief negative thoughts out of the way. One, I've never been a fan. I don't really know if this has ever really been done before. I mean, I could be wrong, but not in the way that it has. I don't like the meta booking of building a match as the greatest match ever, because I don't think it can ever hit that. And I do still think it hurt the match for me, because when you can't have the greatest match ever, or you know, you're very, very, very unlikely to do that, doesn't matter if it's a match of the year candidate. Forget it. It's gotta be one of the greatest matches. I mean, it's gotta be like, you know. I mean, like,
what I wanna know is why, what was the rationale behind doing that?
I don't know what it was.
It's so weird. See,
I think it was. I do think. I agree with a lot of people that I think it was a troll. But I do think it was a troll job.
What's the reason?
Because of the people like burying the Last Man Standing match, and I think it was them going, like, we'll just troll them. Like I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know. I really don't like – I did not like the way they built it in terms of that. I hated that. I'd rather they just say, we're going to have a big rematch. Orton says, you know, you can still have the same story. You know, you beat me in a not basically a non-sanctioned match. You know, last man standing. Well, you know, you can't beat me in a straight wrestling match. Then shock us with how good the match is. Don't fucking bill it as this thing. I hate that. Like that's my biggest criticism. My second thing on the pipe crowd noise is I'm kind of with you. I thought it was funny, but part of me actually think the worst part is that it undermined the rest of the roster. You're going to put all the effort into this match, put all the effort, give them pipe crowd noise and give them even if it's a fabricated one, you know, a better atmosphere, and then make the rest of your talent potentially look worse off because of it. I definitely question that. Of course, I mean, I don't really care that much, but I do think that's if there's anything to get mad about.
I get what you're saying, but I think it's these two guys, so sure. They're probably not. There's not going to be that sentiment. I don't think.
Sure.
It's Randy Orton and Edge.
Right. But yeah, you know, all in all, match was tremendous. It was an excellent, excellent match. Both guys were great, especially Orton. Gosh, Orton was goodness. You know, Edge, I mean, you have to give Edge all the credit in the world, too, because, I mean, like you said, he hadn't wrestled in forever, seemingly wrestled with a torn tricep for, you know, God knows how long. thank God he didn't hurt his neck, by the way. I'm glad. I mean, I'm not glad he got hurt, but you know, I'm glad it was. It's a huge bummer that he got hurt, but I'm, you know, a couple things. I'm glad he got to have this match because it was one hell of a match. Might be his last one. You know, that injury could be it for him, Chris. You know,
I
don't necessarily think so because it's not his neck, but I mean, he's not going to be back for a long time. You know, he might not be back till 2021, depending on.
Yeah.
You know, but. Like this, this was an awesome match. Orton bleeding, made me pop big.
Don't get in WWE. It's a rare occurrence.
Oh yeah. This was basically worked like a Tokyo Dome main event. You know, God forbid New Japan fans hear this or something. But I mean, like it was that style. Yeah, you know, I mean, like, you know, they had their near fall stretch at the end and. You know, right, it's funny, right when they started to get to the point where they were starting to kick out all this stuff, I was like, okay, it's time to take it home, and they did 1 minute later. So, like, it was 45 minutes, it was long as hell anyways, but, you know, right when I was ready for it to end, they ended it, which I also appreciated. But I think you forgot to point out the most important thing.
Okay.
About the finish of this match is that, if we can recall, I'm sure we all know about this, the Tommaso Ciampa, Randy Orton Twitter feud. And Orton, trolling Ciampa about thigh slapping. And Ciampa being defensive about him putting fans to sleep. You know, et cetera, et cetera. Makes me wonder, considering this match was filmed before TakeOver, if Ciampa watched the match, they both thought, man, this match ruled, let's have this Twitter beef and then let's do this. I'm slightly convinced that whole thing is a work, by the way.
Well, it's wrestling.
Yes, there you go. The punt had a nice big thigh slap on it.
Yeah.
At the finish, nice big thigh slap. What a tremendous performance. Pure genius from Randy Orton. Like, to me, that was like the greatest ending to a match I've ever seen, because he literally did a thigh slap after burying it and viciously attacking it and thinking about going to thigh slapping class. He slapped his thigh and won, you know, possibly his best match of his career. To me, that's just ultimate worker level. I mean, that's just elite work right there. I mean, seriously, I mean, that is literally tip top performance right there. Like, I mean, that is like the most awesome, wonderful way to end this match. Like, Orton gets a lot of shit, but that's when he wants to be, that kind of clever stuff is what makes him, you know, pretty damn good. at what he does. Yeah, this was a great match. You know, if they didn't stupidly bill it as the greatest match ever, God, that's dumb. It might be the match of the year. It isn't. Brian Gulak from Elimination Chamber is for me, but this is the second best match of the year for 2020 in WWE, I think. Absolutely worth watching. And one of the only times I can say that Randy Orton and Edge didn't nearly put me to sleep. So this was well worth it, and I think it saved the show. So
and this is Samoa Joe on commentary was fantastic.
Oh my God, yes, gosh, he's kick ass for sure. He's awesome.
He was amazing in this match in particular as well. So hell of an ending to this show, and definitely go out of your way to check it out. Believe me. All right, that's it for us. Now it's time to give our ratings out here. Thumbs down, thumbs up, thumbs in the middle. Where do you stand?
I am going to give it. Oh, geez, this is tough. I don't think I can give it a thumbs up because I think the rest of the show was so bad outside of the WWE title match that I can't give it a thumbs up, but I do give it a thumbs in the middle. You know, it was bad enough to where I can only give it thumbs in the middle outside of the main event. You know, but I will give it a thumbs in the middle.
Thumbs in the middle as well. It would have been heavy thumbs down if the main event hadn't delivered. If they didn't go out there and deliver in that match, it would have been a heavy thumbs down. Even with Drew and Lashley, which I like, but
yep, I agree.
Not good, and it's not inspiring. I mean, it's not inspiring right now to me. I mean, I sat there and I haven't been really watching Wednesday nights, but I watch Wednesday night in AEW and NXT. NXT, I like, but still, I mean, both of them not inspiring. Raw, I've been liking lately, but it's kind of been floundering recently. Now we know why. Not really looking forward to that. SmackDown, don't even watch. So, man, we got to have something happen soon.
Yeah, well, Matt Riddle's coming to SmackDown. We'll see if he can turn chicken shit and chicken salad.
Well, see, and that's the thing where NXT, what's got me, you know, where I'm on NXT more is, you know, stuff we thought we talked about on TakeOver last week, but then you watch the TV Wednesday, and what they do, like we said, Cross and Cole is going to be our title program, so they're going with that.
Of course, then we had the Phantasma angle, which I actually liked.
Oh, I love the Phantasma deal, unmasking, and
so he lost his mask in Mexico, correct? Before he, and then no. He put it back on, or is that? I mean, I don't know.
No.
So that was just like he just totally just took it off right there.
Yeah.
Wow. I did not know that. That makes it even cooler, actually.
Yeah, let me make sure on that, because I do not think he lost his mask in the ring. I could be wrong about that. In fact, I probably am wrong. Yes, he lost it to L.A. Park. I forget this.
I thought he had, because I was like, I don't think he would have done, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if he would have.
Yeah, he lost it. He lost it in August 2018, right as he was going to WWE.
Gotcha.
So. Yes, totally forgot about that.
He was in the crowd tonight, actually, cheering. I think there was a...
Yes,
Without the mask, too.
Well, Marcel Barthel and the Imperium guys were sitting. They showed a crowd shot of the guys that's not... where the camera's facing. And there were people sitting in chairs. I bet the folks on the camera side are like, what? How can they sit? but yeah, I mean, so you got that, and you got the Tim Thatcher thing. I'm really looking forward to see where that goes.
Yes.
So NXT's got some stuff going on, but they're about the only thing that's got stuff going on right now in my mind. So I don't know.
I'm excited to see what Riddle does on SmackDown. You know, I mean,
I'm curious.
Yes. He must be reading my tweets because I mentioned a few weeks ago when he first got called up that my dream is to have a new catch point with Brian Riddle and Gulak, and of course he tweeted that out today. So,
well, AJ Styles had that celebration.
Yeah, you're right.
So there you go. We could get AJ against Matt Riddle. That'd be a match.
Ooh, that'd be good.
So, I don't know. It's just a stagnant time in wrestling right now. As we still don't know what's going to happen with COVID-19. It's just a mystery, like Evolution.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are done. We'll be back in a month for Extreme Rules. We'll see what happens there. So for Devin, this is Chris. We thank you for listening. And so long from the Peach State of Georgia.